From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Welcome to the China in the World podcast and to part one of my two-part conversation with Da Wei, assistant president and professor at the University of International Relations in Beijing, China. Da Wei also serves as the director of the university's Center for International Strategy and Security Studies. Previously, Da Wei was the director of the Institute of American Studies at the Chinese Institutes of Contemporary International Relations, otherwise known as KICR. Many of our listeners will remember Da Wei from our discussion last October when we spoke 1 week after Vice President Pence's Hudson Institute speech that accused Beijing of a whole-of-government approach against the United States. Now, looking back, I think it's safe to say that was just the tip of the iceberg. In part one of this podcast, Da Wei and I discussed developments in the U.S.-China relationship since the August 1st tariff announcements by the U.S., and Da Wei shares his views on Chinese perceptions of the relationship today. Be sure to look out for part two, where Da Wei and I focus on evolutions in China's political, economic, and foreign policies that are affecting and having a big impact on U.S.-China relations. I hope you enjoy the episode, and if you do, be sure to rate us on iTunes. Please also be sure to follow us on Twitter at Carnegie Beijing and tweet us suggestions for future guests and questions for those guests on the China in the World podcast.
Da Wei, it's good to have you back on the China in the World podcast. Thanks for joining.
Thank you for having me.
You know, last week, after I returned to Beijing from the U.S., I hosted a couple delegations from U.S. Congress talking about the U.S.-China relationship and invited some Chinese scholars. And one that you know very well, I won't mention his name, but he started out when asked to describe the current state of the U.S.-China relationship. His answer was, it's bad and it's getting worse. New York Times also had a piece this weekend that described the U.S.-China relationship as essentially in free fall. And I wonder, just to start our discussion, do you agree with these characterizations? And if so, how did we get here?
I agree to some extent. I agree with the two description. I think, yes, China-U.S. relations is bad. And we can see a tendency that it will be worse. So for that reason, I agree with the viewpoints of the Chinese scholar you mentioned. But this is a big trend. I mean, it's a tendency, but I don't think it's a free fall. Mm-hmm. I think the two sides are exploring the way, a new way to live together or to work together. Actually, we have already seen some. We have already seen there are something that we cannot do, mm-hmm. or if we do that, we will suffer a lot. Mm-hmm. For instance, I think the majority view in two countries are the tariffs are not good. Mm. If we impose very high tariff on our trade, I think it's bad for both sides. Mm-hmm. I think this is something that we think we should not do. This is a majority view. I'm not saying this is a Trump administration's view. Mm-hmm. Obviously, mm-hmm. the Trump administration have different viewpoints. And for another example is I think both sides agree that a military conflict is not something we want. Mm. So I mean, yes, it's bad and mm-hmm. it's getting worse. But at the same time, my feeling is the two sides gradually know that we cannot let it turn into a free fall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's focus. You mentioned the tariffs. Let's focus on that just for a little bit, because I've been critical of the tariffs. A lot of Americans have been critical of the tariffs, but a lot of Americans, even those that are being hurt in the United States by the tariffs, for example, many in the agricultural community, soybean farmers, in fact, you ask them, is this hurting you? And they say, absolutely, it's hurting us. But they say President Trump is fighting the right fight, and so we support him. European countries don't necessarily support President Trump, but they're very interested in what he's doing in the trade negotiations, because if Trump can succeed in getting China to change, Europeans see that as being beneficial to them as well. Other Asian countries, and even within China, reformers and private sector say the pressure that Trump is putting on is good. And so a lot of people ask me when I criticize the tariffs, they say, well, what should President Trump do to get China's attention that changes need to be made? What would your answer to that question be?
I think the Trump administration has successfully drawn the attention of Chinese government and also the whole Chinese society to try to solve the problem between China and the U.S. To that part, I think he was very successful, particularly in last year, I think, before he threatened to impose tariff, or after he threatened to impose the tariff. But I think he and his administration has gone too far. I think there is a wrong assessment in the U.S. You mentioned the viewpoints that probably, President Trump did a right thing by, make Chinese more serious. But I think now he has went too far. Now I think the majority view in China is we cannot make concession.
Mm-hmm. What are the things that have sort of led Chinese to conclude he's gone too far? And in that going too far, has it led Chinese to conclude that this is about something that's not trade and economics? Maybe it's something different?
I think the main reason is President Trump made his decision too quickly, and he changed his decision, his idea too quickly. For instance, after the latest round of the negotiation in Shanghai,
You're talking about post Osaka, when President Trump and President Xi met?
Yes.
After that?
Yeah, after that. I think they had a
session in Shanghai.
Yeah, in Shanghai. Mm-hmm. Of course, probably there was no big outcomes after that negotiation, but it was not a failure, I think. But President Trump made his decision to impose extra tariff on Chinese goods.
On the last $300 billion, basically.
Yes. Immediately after his meeting with Lighthizer and Mnuchin. I mean...
And what did this... How was that viewed in China? The tweets on August 1st that
yes.
President Trump said no progress was made in Shanghai. I'm going to tariff the last $300 billion, put tariffs on those last $300 billion.
I think the people here believe that President Trump made his decision too quickly. And mm-hmm. even against the, we believe that probably Secretary Mnuchin and Trade Representative Lighthizer, probably they didn't support President Trump's decision from their bottom of heart.
So why do you think, what's the conclusion then in China? Why did President Trump make that announcement if it may not have been supported by his advisors?
We think this is this should be attributed to his personality. He tends to use a tactic of the maximum pressure mm-hmm. on his opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Like he tried to press North Korea.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to press Iran, and mm-hmm. he also tried to press China.
Mm-hmm.
But we think that he currently, at least, his current status shows that it's not easy to work with them. And he or his administration is not a reliable partner to mm-hmm. have the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
If we make concession, maybe he will change his idea, maybe one day later or 1 month later, mm. who knows?
Mm.
And some people talking, because the two sides are still negotiating,
mm-hmm.
so some people here hope that the two sides can reach agreement within this year or maybe early next year. But I think many, many people, their first question is, what if President Trump changes his idea after we strike a deal with the United States?
Interesting.
Yeah.
Let's go back to April, May timeframe. You and I were in a number of dialogues yeah. together yeah. during that time. And this was before the trade deal fell apart in early May.
Mm-hmm.
There was a cautious optimism in China that we could reach a trade deal. We had heard that a lot of progress had been made. There were hundreds of pages of documents, of agreements between the U.S. and China. And to my surprise, in March and April, the U.S. government became cautiously optimistic that a deal was going to be reached. But in early May, it fell apart. And, what you hear is that within China, after it was document was translated into Chinese and other senior members of the political establishment were able to see the document, there was a feeling like China was agreeing to too much. Therefore, the document was marked up and sent back to the United States. And of course, President Trump saw the marked up document and said, the Chinese are backtracking and we're not gonna play this game. What is the view here in China? What is your view on what happened? Because we were quite hopeful and we were planning in a lot of our dialogues post a deal, the kind of things that we should be doing. For example, how can we enhance the chances that the agreement is implemented? Or how can we make sure that the agreement is communicated well in both capitals? So we were sort of, many of us had kind of moved on because we thought a deal was done, was going to be done. And then to our surprise, the deal fell apart. So what happened and what does that tell us about the dynamics in China and between the U.S. and China?
Yeah, the story that you mentioned, I think I read it too from the American media. Unfortunately, I don't know the other side of the story. I have no information from Chinese side. Say what is what was the real story? Was the report of the New York Times correct or not? I don't know. But what I know is basically the same thing as you mentioned. Mm. So let's assume that's correct. That's precise. Chinese side changed their idea. I think it's possible because, to be honest, I was a little bit surprised after the meeting summit in Argentina.
This is in November.
November, mm-hmm. last November. I was a little surprised that the two sides are moving towards the direction that they will strike a deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think, wow, Chinese side made a very, will make very essential compromise with the American counterpart. But of course, I was encouraged very much. But at the same time, I felt that it's hardly to believe
mm.
because its recession is so... the concession was so huge. China is a very complicated country, and
mm-hmm.
there are different views, and there are different interest group too here. And of course, even among the political leaders, I believe there are different views. But the negotiation was between the two teams and a very small circle, because it's I think in both countries this negotiation has been very confidential,
right?
In a very small closed circle.
Mm-hmm.
So once this draft was circulated among a wider policy community, I think it met some opposition. That's something I think it's natural. As I said, I was surprised that if that kind of draft can be accepted by mm-hmm. Chinese side. So I'm a little bit disappointed about the development, yeah. But it's something natural, I will say.
I was disappointed too. And, it's interesting. I want to go back to our discussion in October, you and I.
Yeah.
The last time we did this China in the World podcast. Mm-hmm. And you had said, you know, that it's important for China to acknowledge legitimate concerns by the international community and the United States, yeah. Surrounding the issues of, you know, China's trade and economic practices. Mm-hmm. And China, of course, had announced this ambitious set of reforms in 2013 at the third plenum. And a lot of folks in China and the U.S. have been saying that, you know, the way to strike a win-win is for the Chinese leadership to decide for its own reasons to move forward on those economic reforms, that many of those economic reforms will respond to legitimate grievances by the international community and the United States. It seemed to me when we were in the spring, the April, March, April timeframe, that that's what was happening, that yeah. the leadership here in China had decided, you know, we can move on these reforms. It will be good for China's economy. It will continue to drive the economic growth. And at the same time, we can reach a deal with the U.S. because this will respond to U.S. and other international concerns. But as you say, it met with resistance. So, you know, you've talked about Trump going too far. There's a view in the United States that the Obama administration, the Bush administration, didn't go far enough, mm-hmm. didn't do enough. So how do we think about this from the United States and the international community in terms of what's the right way to engage China on these issues to see a response that's good for China, good for the U.S. and the international community? How can we make progress on these issues? What's the right balance?
If I were American,
yeah.
I think President Trump was successfully, he successfully drew attention from Chinese side. I think he did the, if I were American, I think he did the right thing, right part of that. But I think keeping pressure is not equal to humiliating Chinese,
mm-hmm.
and also keeping pressure, because negotiation is always a very difficult process. So if you want to keep this negotiation, the momentum moving forward, you should not just press and press and press. If you don't accept my condition, then I will give you more pressure. Then I will give you $200 billion tariffs. If you don't accept, I will impose another $300 billion. And then if you don't accept, I will add the tariff again from 10% to 20%.
Mm-hmm.
This kind of thing, we believe that that's too much.
So basically what I think you're saying is it's difficult for the Chinese leadership to make concessions or commitments, even if they're in China's interest to do so, if it looks like they're making those commitments only because of the pressure from the Trump administration.
There yes.
needs to be a much more nuanced approach.
Yes. And also, you know, I think what the Trump administration has done make many Chinese experts and officials worries about the real intention of Trump administration. Does the Trump administration really want to make a good deal with China, mm-hmm. or does the administration and the hawks in the U.S. just want to keep China down?
Let me ask you about that. Is there in China, let's take President Trump. as one entity, and the rest of the administration as another entity. How is it viewed in China? What's the view about what President Trump wants to achieve with China? What's his vision of a good U.S. approach to China? Is it different than the rest of the administration? And if so, how?
Yeah, I think this is my personal view. I think there are at least three kinds of or four kinds of view I heard from the administration. I think President Trump himself is one entity, as you said. What he wants are two things. One thing is a more balanced trade. Mm-hmm. He wants to reduce the surplus of China.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing he wants is a deal with China, or show to the voters that he is a strong leader who can force China to accept a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
So this is mm-hmm. a political purpose, I think. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. one. The other group, I think, I call them economic nationalists.
Mm-hmm.
I think they view the issue from economic competition between the two countries.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't want China to surpass the U.S. In terms of its overall economic size and in the key sectors of the economy, for instance, high-tech industry.
Mm-hmm.
The third group, the third voice I heard more or less from the establishment, from the represents the view of the business community. They want to eliminate the unfair behavior, of China side, according to American standard. The fourth
is that mostly on economics, or are you talking about other areas? Mostly on economics.
Mostly economic.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth.
So that's similar to President Trump.
But I think Trump only particularly focused on the balance of the trade. Mm-hmm. I mean the surplus.
Oh, the trade balance.
The trade balance.
Mm-hmm.
While the third voice I mentioned.
On the structural issues.
Yeah, on the structural issues. Exactly.
Got it.
The fourth group, I think, I call them national security hawks. Mm-hmm. I think they view the economic issue more or less from a national security perspective mm-hmm. rather mm-hmm. than from rather than an economic mm-hmm. perspective. For instance, we should not let the Chinese company dominate the 5G industry.
Mm-hmm.
This is for national security
mm-hmm.
reason.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different voices mm-hmm. From the American, from the Trump administration.
Is there an ideological angle to any of this?
Yes. I think this is a very critical angle. Angel. I think that's probably underlying most of those four voices I mentioned. I mm-hmm. think for the first time, the ideological factor becomes a very, very critical factor in China-U.S. relations, particularly in the U.S. side. I think probably all those four sectors I mentioned made their decisions they have an ideological basis, mm-hmm. make their decision from not only from the reason I mentioned, but also plus ideological
mm-hmm.
basis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I noticed the People's Daily had a political cartoon yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
President Trump, Uncle Sam actually, was running on the track.
Mm.
And in the lane next to him was the China lane, and he was throwing spikes down on the lane. And the others, the EU and other countries, had other lanes, and he was throwing spikes down there too. So the idea is, this is all about maintaining America's advantage and keeping others behind the United States. How much is that ingrained in the Chinese thinking?
I think many Chinese believe that. This is what I mentioned, that if the U.S. want to keep China down. I think I personally believe this is the viewpoints of the so-called economic nationalist, yeah. but it's viewed as a Trump administration's view here in China. I think for a very long time, there is an underlying assumption in China in past four decades when we working with the American. We believe that if we engage the world, if we work with the Americans and other partners, this system, I mean international system, and also the United States will give China enough space to grow. And actually, China did grow very rapidly in the system. And even one day, China may surpass the U.S. So long as we work hard enough, so long as we keep on keeping engagement with mm-hmm. the outside world. But now, I think many people have their concern about this assumption. They believe that the world, they have many, many evidence from what the Trump administration has done to say this is a jungle. The international relation is mm-hmm. the rule of jungle should be applied. That, you know, once China catching up with the U.S., the U.S. will try to undermine or try to slow or even stop China's growth. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, this has become maybe a majority view in China. So if we view the U.S. in that way, and if the U.S. view China from, like you said, ideological perspective, I think we will have trouble in bilateral relations.
I hope you enjoyed the episode. Be on the lookout for the release of Part 2 later this month, where Dawei and I discuss evolutions in China's political, economic, and foreign policies that are impacting the U.S.-China relationship. And if you enjoyed this episode, have any feedback, or want to send us questions and suggestions for future guests, please leave us a comment on iTunes or tweet us at Carnegie Beijing.